Okay, thank you. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay, so today, as Julia said, I will speak about loop-induced couplings. We have already heard a bit about that, and I will basically, the talk is coming from this very simple idea that from the time of LEP, we had really plenty of information on electroweak precision observables. Actually, if somebody asks me, I can comment. I don't cover that now here. Yeah, I'm sorry. Otherwise, it would be. Yeah. Sure. So, if you put in the past together all these electroweak precision observables, you could have already guessed where the Higgs boson mass was, actually at a low mass. And indeed, with the discovery of the Higgs boson, we learned that we are not too far from this interval that we learned from electroweak precision observables. And also from the time of LEP, we had really a lot of constraints on new physics models. So the idea is, what can we do using precision measurement of the Higgs couplings? So if we can learn something on new physics, if the measurement of the Higgs couplings can lead to some new physics scale, and which kind of constraints we can learn from that. So this, as I said, is a very simple idea. So basically, what we want to do is to over-constrain new physics. So experimentalists are really doing a great job for this point one, so they are looking for new physics particles. And another way, of course, to constrain new physics is to measure better and better Higgs couplings, in particular, those arising at one loop level in the standard model that are very good probe on new physics. And then, of course, another way would be to study this kind of processes, so production of new physics particles that are coupled to the Higgs in order to address the hierarchy problem. So decaying to a Higgs plus something, or vice versa, if these new physics particles are light, we could simply produce a Higgs that then is going to these new physics particles. So basically, we have at least these three ways to test new physics. And for this talk, I would like to focus on the interplay between these first two points, so LHC searches and what we learn from measurement of the Higgs loop-induced couplings. So first of all, why do we expect some new physics effect in these loop-induced couplings? Now, if you are still led by the principle of naturalness, then you expect that you have in the loop, here in the loop, some new physics particle that is not too heavy, such a way to cancel qualitative divergences. Now, if here in the loop you have found some new physics particle that is running and is also charged under the standard model gauge group, then here you can simply attach two external legs to photons or eventually to gluons. You take one of these Higgs legs, you give it up, and then you see that you have a new physics effect in this loop-induced coupling. So basically, you can see this effect here as a probe of naturalness, as it has been pointed out very recently by these papers. Then also, what you can do is to give a BEV to the last Higgs leg. And then you see that basically you relate these effects in the Higgs loop-induced coupling to the QED and QCD beta function. And this is the well-known low-energy Higgs theorem. Now, also, you would like to understand which kind of numerically, how large these new physics effects are. Now, as we already heard, the new physics effects will arise at dimension 6. So simply, if you do a naive dimensional analysis, then these new physics effects will scale as v squared over the lambda new physics square. So you expect something at a level of 5 to 10%. Of course, this is, very much model dependent. It will depend on the coupling of the Higgs with these new physics particles. It will depend on the number of the new physics particles that you have. But on general ground, you don't expect really order one or huge new physics effects in these couplings. So this is a very brief review of what happens in the standard model, as we all know. So you can break down these effective couplings of the Higgs with two gluons or two photons. So basically, you have a dependence on loop function with a W running in the loop or a top loop. And if you compute this coupling with two gluons, you don't have to, the next two leading order corrections are pretty much important. They've been computed until the n cube LO level. Here I'm putting just the first three terms in the expansion. And as you see, if you consider simply next to the order, then the corrections will be at a level of 10% or so. So you cannot really neglect if your aim is to see what a precision measurement of this Higgs coupling can do. And of course, for the coupling of the Higgs with two photons, this next to leading order corrections will be smaller. So this is the present status of the measurement of Atlas and CMS for these loop-induced couplings. So they are showing 68% confidence level, 95% confidence level. So basically what you see is that the best fit is not too far away from the standard model prediction. And these are the errors that we have now. So basically we have errors that are at a level of 20% or so on the couplings. What we expect for the future, a lot of work has been done to determine which kind of measurement one could have for all the Higgs couplings, and in particular, as I am underlying here, for the loop-induced Higgs couplings. And you see that basically going to a IRC, one could expect a measurement at the level of a few percent of these two couplings. So one important question would be what we learn on new physics with this measurement at a level of a few percent, or also what we could learn on new physics after or during the LHC run, so where the accuracy, of course, will be less than a few percent, more than a few percent. So the kind of new physics effect that we are considering are new physics effects that are coming from new physics particles that are running in the loop. So basically, in our work, what we are doing is to consider this low-energy Higgs theorem. Here I'm showing this theorem simply at the two-loop level for the effective coupling of the Higgs with two gluons. So basically, this effective coupling will depend on the beta function, the QCD beta function at the two-loop, and then on the mass anomalous dimension at one loop. Here, simply for completeness, I am showing what are the beta function the beta functions at two loop for a fermion or a scalar representations. And instead, in our paper, what we are considering is simply a leading order low energy Higgs theorem for the coupling of the Higgs with two photons, because there we don't expect really large QCD corrections, especially if we are assuming that running the loop we have electroweak particles. So what we do is to compute at the next two leading order the widths of the Higgs into two gluons. So basically, you have to consider these Wilson coefficients at the next leading order. So these are those already arising in the standard model, plus eventually a scalar contribution, a new physics scalar contribution. And then also, you have to take into account this correction factor that is coming from soft gluons in the effective field theory. If you do that, and then you ask the question which kind of new physics scales one can probe, then one can, just for a matter of testing new physics scales, one can take some representation of the standard model gauge group and ask which kind of new scales we can probe. Here we are taking a fermion in fundamental representation of SU3, here a scalar in the adjoint representation, and here are basically the contours for 25% of new physics effect in this partial width, 10% or 5%. And for comparison, we are also showing, so basically if you take this solid line, then you should compare this solid line with this green contour. And the solid line is obtained simply sticking to the leading order. So you see that basically the central value on the new physics mass that is probed can shift like by 20% or so. And of course, simply taking the leading order, the theoretical error will be larger. So here, we wanted simply to show the importance of going to next to leading order in the theoretical prediction of this coupling of the Higgs with two gluons. Of course, in life, it is much more difficult than here. So basically, we would expect to have not only one single particle entering the loop and giving a new physics effect in this effective coupling. But what we can expect are some new physics models that are predicting an effect on this effective coupling that is coming from multiple particles. In particular, if you take the case of supersymmetry, then you will have two stops that are changing this effective coupling. And here are the corresponding parameter space that can be probed by a measurement at a level of 25, 10, or 5% level. The difference between these two plots is that in the first one, you are fixing soft masses for the two stops that are degenerate. And instead, in the second one, this R parameter is quite large. So basically, you have a large hierarchy between the soft masses. And what is important to notice here is that the information that you can get on the parameter space is kind of complementary to the information that you would get from, for example, the measurement of the Higgs mass. So this is kind of model independent in the sense that if you are in a supersymmetric framework, where you don't have too large effect on these D terms, you expect that this constraint on the parameter space is kind of model independent, so you can go also beyond the minimum model. Then, concerning the prediction for the Higgs mass, what you have is something very much model dependent. And you can draw here the constraints on the coming from the measurement of the Higgs mass, assuming that you are in the framework of the MSSM. And you see that basically the measurement of these couplings is the information on the measurement of this Higgs coupling is complementary to the information about the Higgs boson mass. Here I'm showing the region that is compatible with a Higgs boson mass at the level of 125 GeV with a 3 GeV of theoretical uncertainty. What is also even more interesting is that so it has been shown in the literature that this Higgs boson at around 125 GeV can be accommodated by a model with stop one that is pretty much light. Let's call it 100 to 150 GeV. But actually, if you put together the information about measurement of the Higgs coupling, measurement of this mass, you see that if you find that the Higgs coupling with two gluons is pretty much standard model-like, with a small error, then you would kind of rule out this region here that is predicting a correct, let's say, Higgs mass, but is at the same time predicting also a sizable deviation on this Higgs 2-glu-glu coupling. So basically, I'm telling this because I would like to show you that the more and more precise measurement of this Higgs loop-induced coupling can be complementary to other informations that we have, as for example from the measurement of the Higgs boson mass. And of course, another complementary information is coming from LHC searches for stops. We know that experimentalists are really doing a great job in constraining the parameter space for stops. So here there is just a summary of the several exclusion bounds for stops decaying others to B-chargino or top neutralino. And however, these kind of bounds are quite model dependent because, for example, they are assuming that we have 100% decay into a top neutralino, for example. And then, as we see here, they pretty much depend on the mass of the LSP. However, the parameter space that can be tested by a a precise measurement of Higgs coupling is relying to different assumptions. So basically putting together these two different information can really give us a lot of information on the complete, let's say, parameter space of the stops. And also, you have to keep in mind that the stop searches are not doing too well for very squeezed scenarios. So basically, if you go to a model in which the stop mass is not too far away from the LSP mass, let's say a mass splitting at a level of 20 GeV or so, then basically you don't have bounds. But however, if the stop here is pretty much light, it could give a sizable contribution to the Higgs to glu-glu coupling. So it could be kind of tested first by the precise. Oh, I see, but completely, I see. Okay, yeah, still 250 GV, and also there, yeah, it could be still tested also in the Higgs coupling, and thanks, I know that they were doing it, but I didn't see the public note. So another possibility is to have but with Giudice or?
You're a theorist.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. Yeah. This. Yeah. Okay. I'm aware of that paper. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
No experimental paper.
Yes.
Blessed by the collaborations of Stefan. Although, and I have to say that.
Okay, no, forget it. I was going to ask for a citation, but
that we did that first with Freitas and Marcela.
Yeah, of course, another possibility is to have exotic decays of these stops. And one example that we have recently studied is a stop decay into a Staub neutrino that is coming from models that are able also to predict a sizable effect in the photon rate. So this could be motivated by this kind of models and can be used to claim that indeed there can be kind of loopholes in LHC searches for light stops that could be complementarily probed by measurement of the Higgs coupling. And here just a couple of words on this interesting decay mode is that, as I said, that there are not dedicated searches. And but actually, what we have done is to show that the most important constraints are coming from recasting LHC measurement of cross-section of for TT bar with final state of tau plus something, so tau plus leptons or jets. And we have shown that actually if the stop mass is not too far from the top mass, then branching ratios at close to one could be already excluded simply from this standard model measurement. So if we go down to the analysis, the corresponding analysis of the diphoton partial width, you can again write down the expression, this time at the leading order. Again, you can show what are the type of constraints on the parameter space if you take some representation of the standard model gauge group and you assume that these new degrees of freedom do not have SU3 charge. And basically what you learn is that now probing this partial width at a level of 25% or so would probe much lower physical masses, because basically what this new physics effect have to do is to compete with the W boson of the standard model. Again, you can go to more concrete models on new physics. Again, you can go to supersymmetry. And one example are the Staus of supersymmetry. And these Staus can give a sizable new physics effect in this Higgs effective coupling. It has been shown that actually sizable effect can just come in models where this x tau, this mixing term, is sizable, as shown also from this plot. So this region here is the region predicting a sizable effect. And then also you see that basically what you would probe first are star masses that are pretty much low and also heavily mixed. Now, we were wondering how this can be compared with direct searches for these STAUs. LHC is, of course, looking for STAUs, and there are already some important bounds. For example, CMS is giving a bound already more than 300 GV for STAUs that are long-lived. But of course, if you have STAUs that are promptly decaying, then these bounds should not be applied. Then also, LHC is looking for STAUs coming from SUSY cascade decays of gluinos and squarks. And also, other searches for these STAUs can are these multi-lepton searches of CMS and Atlas. And also, more recently, there have been a search for STAUs directly produced, so pair-produced STAUs, giving as a final state 2 TAUs plus missing energy. But actually, in this Atlas public note, it has been shown that we are really still far away from setting important bounds on STAU parameter space. So basically, the most important bound is still the lab bound. So again, we were asking if we are in this region here, where the new physics effect on this Higgs effective coupling is sizable, if LHC can tell something. And so if we can improve the searches for these TAUs in that region of parameter space. So what we studied is the associative production of a STAU plus a neutrino. So basically, these models that do have a sizable new physics effect in the diphoton partial width also predict a sizable splitting between this neutrino and the STAU. So basically, what you expect is this decay chain. So the STAU, this neutrino is then decaying to a W plus a STAU. The W is in generally relatively boosted, so it's giving a lepton that is relatively boosted. So basically, what you can do with this channel is to ask for a lepton that is with a sizable PT. And then you have kind of a struggle against the W plus jet background that is the main source of background with jet faking TAUs. And actually, what you can do is to use this simple kinematical trick that is the following. So basically, if you ask for a lepton that is boosted, then the leading jet from the background will have also to be boosted because it has to recoil against the lepton. And here is the distribution of the PT of the leading lepton. And you see that from the signal, the leading jet, you see that from the signal, however, the leading tau is not as boosted as for the background because now the leading tau doesn't have to recoil against anything. So basically, vetoing hard taus really improve a lot the signal to background ratio. And you can put the numbers. And what you see is that actually you can reach signal to background ratio of the order one, let's say. But the cross sections in the game are pretty low because you are speaking about electroweak production. So basically, you really would need a lot of statistics. So this is simply an example that is showing that basically the measurement of the Higgs coupling probably could come first in testing this model than LHC searches that are pretty much complicated. Finally, the last example that I wanted to give is the effect on the diphoton partial widths coming from charginos. If you take the charginos of the MSSM, it is well known that the new physics effect in the diphoton coupling is small, and you have to go to a regime of tangent beta that is also kind of small. And basically, you see that you have something larger than 10% on the partial width of the Higgs to diphoton. You need to have the lightest chargino that is very close to the lab bound, that is this gray region that is excluded by lab. So basically, we can again ask the question how LHC is doing for searches of these charginos. And this is a partial answer. So these are the three lepton plus MET searches for neutralino and chargino associative production of Atlas. These are the corresponding bounds as you have already seen from Atlas based on 5 plus 21 inverse femtoparnon data. The difference between these two plots is that in the first one, we are assuming light leptons. So basically, neutralino and charginos are decaying to 3 leptons with the mediation of light leptons that are on shell. And instead, for the second scenario, Atlas is assuming heavy leptons. So the decay is simply mediated by off-shell gauge bosons. You see here that the constraints are pretty much sizable already. So we are speaking about multi-hundred GV scales. Again, it depends a lot on the LSP mass. And again, we were curious to see what happens for more, let's say, complicated scenarios, as for example, scenarios where the mass gap between Chagino and LSP is small, because we see here that LHC is not doing too well in this region here. So this is pretty much a work in progress that hopefully will appear very soon. So basically, the question is what LHC can do for these squeezed scenarios in the search for charginos in 3 lepton plus MET final state. And what we were doing is to select the most important kinematical observables that are able to discriminate between signal and background. The first observation is that if you focus to scenarios with a small mass splitting, then you see that the invariant mass between same flavor opposite sign leptons is also pretty much small compared to what you get from WZ and W gamma background that is shown in black in this plot. So basically, the first observation is that if you cut and you keep only pretty much small same flavor opposite sign invariant masses, then you will go to exclude the most part of the background. And this is kind of easy to see. But still, this is not enough to really go into this region that is this squeezed region. So what one possibility is to use a relatively boosted ISR jet. So basically, you ask to have at least one jet with a PT larger than some tenth of GeV. And so basically, you see that if you compare these distributions for MET over the PT of the jet or PT of the leading lepton over PT of the jet, you see that asking for a boosted ISR jet is helping to have a discriminating power between signal and background. So basically, asking for a PT of the jet larger than 100, you see that the two signal benchmarks with a splitting of 20 GV or a splitting of 50 GV will be pretty much we'll have a pretty much distribution pretty much different than what you get for the background. So basically, here you see that the MET is pretty much correlated to the PT of the leading jet. And another very important kinematical observable that can be used to discriminate between signal and background is the ratio between the PT of the leading lepton and the PT of the jet. And you see that from the signal, the leading lepton is much softer than for the background. So this can be used to see what you can do and which kind of bounds you can put on more squeezed scenarios. And here the comparison in the case of heavy leptons or light leptons between our reach and the Atlas reach. And you see that you can have some probe or more squeezed spectrum than what LHC is presently having. Still, scenarios with a mass gap less than 15 GV or so are pretty much difficult to be probed in this 3 lepton plus MET final state. So this scenario is showing that basically, once more, if you are in this region here, then it will be pretty much difficult to have a probe directly from the LHC. And maybe, who knows, we'll have a complementary probe from the measurement of the Higgs couplings. So this brings me to my conclusions that are pretty simple. So basically, what I wanted to show in this talk is the complementarity between different ways of probing new physics. And in particular, between direct searches of new particle satellite C and the precision measurement of the Higgs couplings. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much for this nice presentation. Carlos.
So, while doing that, you detected a mistake in the literature on the next linear corrections to the Squark loop inducing Higgs to be blue, right?
Yes, so, as I showed.
It will be consistent with that.
So, as I showed here, what we are using is the two loop low energy Higgs theorem. So, basically, you need the computation of the anomalous or the mass anomalous dimension. We did the exercise for stops. And there are, so here you have a contribution from stop loop to this anomalous dimension. And there are some papers with a different result than us. But I think we settled down the confusion and.
So they are wrong.
There are some papers in the literature that there are, yes.
No, I don't know.
Any other question or comment? Yes, sir.
Wait a second.
Let's say, I don't remember by hand the numbers, but in our paper, there are this coefficient written exactly in terms of the C2 and TS.
Right.
So I don't know if these are there or not, let's say, but you can check with our
sure.
paper some time ago. Okay. Just to go.
Just a second. Wait a second.
Perhaps I'll just add a comment on the comment, because I think that the controversy is really. There are two contributions to the mass anomalous dimension. One is from the pure QCD. Okay, that coefficient is 9.5. That has no controversy. I think everybody agreed. And my impression is that's there in every literature. But what's not usually included is a squark quartic interaction. Okay, but okay then we'll check.
Okay.
So if you go to this program, high glue. Mm-hmm. What do you find there?
Oh, actually, we didn't check this. Yeah, we should check that program.
You should ask Michael.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, all the data that I'm showing are computed with our analytic formula, so we didn't check these programs.
Yeah, just a second.
I have a naive question from experimentalists. So,
sure.
When you do this, do you also consider constraints that come from B physics, from loop induced B decays? Because
this question is kind of complementary. I mean, there are really different assumptions that could go there, right? So it depends a bit on your model, but
okay.
Correct?
Yes.
So, yeah, we didn't study specifically this question. So you can have models that can have constraints from B physics, for example. But what I was trying to do is to give it some information about complementary searches that are kind of correlated. I mean, when you speak then about flavor, then you put a lot of more model dependence if you want. So this is, I agree with you, and as I put a note in my conclusions, this could be another complementary way of testing new physics, but this is not really the question of our analysis.
Can you go to slide 18? So if I'm interpreting the right plot correctly, I'm worried that that's actually a stronger bound than what you might expect in the real world, just because the neutralino 2 can go to Higgs neutralino 1, sort of lower down, away from the
So that's the usual, the spoiler mode, and they're assuming,
yes.
Are they assuming 100% branching ratio?
Right. They are never considering the decay to a Higgs neutralino 1.
So I think it's perfectly fair to not take that bound seriously.
Yeah, in this, I mean, concrete models, you will have also this decay mode, so you will have to change it. But yeah, I agree. This is done under this assumption. If you accept the assumption, then you get these bounds. But in concrete models, you should revise this bound here. Yeah.
And also the Higgsinos, they're all winos.
Sure, yeah.
So if they were Higgsinos, the cross-section is lower,
and
they came to Higgs.
Yeah.
There are too many assumptions, even within that.
Yes. I mean, here, what I'm showing afterwards, when we try to probe more squeezed scenarios, we are doing the same set of assumptions to see, you know, if we can do better than, in this case, the Atlas collaboration in this squeezed spectrum scenario. But I agree that there are really a lot of assumptions going in drawing these bounds.
Okay. If there are no more questions, let's thank Stefania again.